welcome to the Visionista podcast. I'm your host, Jessica East of Noir Marketing and PR. This podcast is for entrepreneurs where we talk about business and work-life balance. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Visionista podcast. I am your host, Jessica East, and I am here with my friend, Brian Wallace of Now Sourcing. And he is, can we say globally known now as a...
I think it counts. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Cause yeah, you've been national for a while and we've now dipped our toes into global notoriety for really awesome infographics. So, do you want to take 2 minutes and tell everybody what you do?
Yeah. So I think, so first off, thank you for the opportunity. I feel like it's long overdue. So I'm happy to chat here. This will probably just run like
let's
you
blame and I COVID.
Listening. Yeah, totally. And we're not even that far away from each other, right?
Like no. An hour, maybe?
Maybe, like depending on what city we're both at, like half hour, totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I find that a lot of people, I wish people understood what infographics were, but more importantly, why people would do it in the first place. I think a lot of people assume that they know what an infographic is, and they almost always undervalue it because they don't understand what we're actually doing with it. So over the past couple of years, I've changed the way that we talk about it. So rather than just saying, I make infographics for somebody to pat me on the head and be like, oh, good job, dummy. Like, don't you know, you can download templates for free on the internet. That's not the point. We make ideas better by making them simple, visual, and influential. So simplicity is like currency on the internet. Simplicity gives you permission for a little bit of their brain so that they spend more attention and give you more permission for more time. The vehicle to do that is through visuals. But the point of all of this is all of that influence. Notice I did not say influencer. I'm not talking about buying a fake blue checkbox. I'm not a blonde supermodel that poses in a bikini on the beach on Instagram or TikTok or whatever the flavor of the day is. I'm talking about actual
face.
Hey, I mean, I could try, but I don't think anybody wants. I don't think that's why everybody's tuning in, y'all. But more of what is the influence that you could bring digitally to a company that they could achieve massive success? That's what it comes to.
And you guys have had quite a bit of success doing those things because you do it very well.
Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of people, and this doesn't have to be infographics, press, PR, or anything, or just general influence. I think the word of the day that everybody needs to think about when it comes to what you're saying, Jessica, is mastery. Most people give up before they're actually world-renowned at stuff. And they just spend a lot of time reinventing themselves. But if they just kind of stayed in the same lane, they could achieve some tremendous things because most people, you know, okay, you get a little bit of mastery. You get 20% good, 30% good, 50% good. And then everybody kind of falls off the map once they start hitting 70%, 80%. Like there isn't like an actual like grade book here, but imagine in our thought experiment, most people don't get to be at, let's say, the top 10% of their game, but then every percent or even micro percent of that is like an ocean, right? How many people fall off when they're at 98% good at whatever it is they do?
Who was it? Eisenhower that said, if you're going through hell, keep going. No, wait, that was a general. Who was that? Who said that?
I could go Google it, but I don't know.
I'll Google it later. If and I know I've posted it before, so if you're listening, it'll be at the bottom. If you're going through hell, keep going, because at some point you will have that breakthrough. And at some point, you know, I know people who are always changing. There's this one lady that I know every 12 to 18 months, she's got this new thing she's super passionate about and everybody's all like congratulatory. And I am not because like, I wish her well, I don't wish ill for her. I'm just kind of like, oh, like you're still trying to figure yourself out. Like take a minute and figure yourself out, because that's just, anyway, that is not the point of why we're chatting here today.
But it is a stupid waste of energy though, right? Like a lot of people. So social media has an element of narcissism and toxicity. So when we see our friends, rather than if we were like, let's say in the old school where we didn't have all these social networks and we would just see from our friends and family and our coworkers in the office, somebody, you know, quits to start a job and they do this, they do that. Now it's happening at such an accelerated pace. Everybody's like jealous because, oh, wow, this guy randomly like got some NFT and it's worth $1 million. So I better go try to do that. I'm going to go be an NFT expert. So let me set fire to all of the businesses that I'm working with doesn't make any sense. A lot of people, they're climbing this tree to fame and it's going to nowhere. Yeah.
Well, and what is fame really? You know, that's one of those ambiguous things. My kids, there's five of them between my husband and myself. Three of them are naturally mine. The three that are naturally mine are all bonkers. Like they are 100% bonkers. They are my children. I claim them. Okay, cool. We have had this conversation for years, not only them pushing, but also other people who know us pushing for us to have like a YouTube channel or something, because we have all this great content and we're funnier than the people that are out there. And the stuff that happens to us is just weird. And I'm like, well, I agree with you, but I don't want weirdos in my bushes. I don't want to have to buy another house because people figured out where I live. And now they want to like drive by and see us, which is what happens when you reach a certain level of fame and notoriety. I don't want people sending me sob stories asking for money. Like, no, go away. I want to be like fancy in my own right, in my own mind, but I don't want to be, I was going to say, I don't want to be notorious. I could deal with notorious. I just don't want everybody in the world knowing, you know, what goes on with us.
This is why you're all the time. No, listen, this is why we're friends, because we're not egomaniacs. I think the problem is that people don't understand fame. Mm-hmm. More than that, they don't understand influence. So when you think about influence in the positive regard, that's a tree worth going up, because if you use your influence to impact and uplift others and do good for society, and yeah, you do okay for yourself too. You can be a little fancy, notorious, whatever. That is serving from a place of the opposite of fame, which is ego. The opposite of ego is humility, right? So if I'm in the media, if you're in the media, we're like, okay, cool. And then like, we'll do our next meeting and go for coffee with someone. Like we're not waiting for everybody to like sign autographs. Like, you know, I have a lot of fame on the so-called fame on the internet. And I'm like, when people are like, wow, it's such an honor to talk to you, I'm like, do you think I'm going around like getting rich, like signing autographs? I'm just some dude who people know on the internet.
Have a line of like sunglasses or masks with your goatee on it?
I sure hope not.
Hashtag missed opportunities.
There's a lot of missed opportunities, and it's knowing what to spend your time on to stand above the opportunities. Because I think a lot of the world, they suffer from opportunity syndrome, because there's unlimited opportunities every moment of the day all over the world for you. Mm-hmm. But if you lose your focus, you're not able to realize any of them. So you got to stick with the ones that are in your lane. And
It's easy to get distracted because of all of those things that are easy, you know, to access at your fingertips.
Sometimes people, they just need to like think of all the skills they're at. So it's dumb to just say, well, I like graphic design, but I also like this. Well, instead of like having one thing that's like your passion project and one thing that's your money game, if you look at it and you build all of your lateral skills and knowledge into just this superset of things. It doesn't mean you have to be well-rounded or good at everything, because that's a lie. Nobody's good at everything, right? You don't do all your taxes and build buildings and I don't know, like do you grow your own crops? No, like we have modern society and we trade things for money and services and stuff. So I don't know. It's all about figuring out what you're good at, but going stringing across a number of things that you're good at. I think that's an opportunity that many people miss, which is why they struggle with what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And kind of like circling back to a minute or two ago, you know, what you were talking about with ego and leadership, that's, well, the ego thing is good leadership. You know, I mean, everybody's had a manager that they really love, who's really great at managing, and everybody's had a manager who's not so great at managing, maybe just like downright terrible. And ego is a big part of that, I think. One of my other LinkedIn, buddies, Chris, he's out in Oklahoma, I think. He does Endurance Federal Credit Union. He is the grand poobah and big cheese over there. He's been on the show a couple times. He talks frequently about servant leadership. And, you know, if you're not willing to get right there with your people and do whatever the task is that needs to be done, you know, there's a problem there. So I think that is, for anybody who's building a business, leading a business, trying to lead others, that's, you know, you lead by example. So I think that's a a good thing to stick in the back of your brain for later.
Very true.
So anyway, how are we doing on time? I know you've got, this is a rapid session today, folks.
You're fine. You're fine. I'm sure there's people waiting, but that's okay.
Okay. One thing that I wanted to make sure we talked about, because this was kind of why we wanted to chat today anyway, why you agreed to chat with me anyway. For those who don't know, Brian and I met on LinkedIn. I don't even know how many years ago. We had lots of mutual connections. Yep. And pre-pandemic, we had discussed doing, was it LinkedIn Live? Is that what it was?
So there's a couple different things. LinkedIn Live, a lot of people don't realize that there are the ability to do live streaming on LinkedIn. It is not an automatic thing that's in your account. It used to be in a very, very closed beta where it was invite only. And now I believe that isn't the case anymore. And all you have to do is apply, and then you have to present your case. They look at your content and then they give you the green light. And then you have some third-party software that bridges to allow you to go live.
Okay.
The other thing.
I was talking about the in-person thing.
Yeah. Right. Okay, cool. All right.
Okay. Sure. Sorry.
Yeah. No.
A lot has happened in the last 2 years. Like, and nobody meets in person anymore. Listen,
man, there's too many things that sound the same anyway. So I think the thing that you're talking about is LinkedIn Local. So
Local, that's what it was. Yeah.
All right. Sweet. All right. So LinkedIn Local is something that dates a few years back towards the beginning of the kind of the renaissance of the creator economy on LinkedIn, because LinkedIn used to kind of be a snooze fest and it was just like ridden with like spammy sales things and recruiters and, you know, hey, salespeople and recruiters, we love you. But at the same time, it was annoying because like all the other people were just getting spammed only by this like very narrow dimension. So a number of years ago, there were like half a dozen people that were all over the place, different parts of the world, that kind of got together and they said, wouldn't it be great to know the people behind the profiles on LinkedIn? So as a user movement, they started something called LinkedIn Local. Fast forward to today, it kind of changed hands from user community to LinkedIn official. But aside from that, this has been in, I think, over 100,000 people, cities throughout the world, like every country imaginable. So people would get together with it. It's not like a hard and fast rule. So almost like TED versus TEDx. So LinkedIn Local had different guidelines and there were different ambassadors. But the short of it is people would have intimate to mid-sized gatherings. So it could be 10 to 20 people in a bar or restaurant, could be a few hundred people. A couple of years ago, I helped spearhead one in Metro New York that was probably like over 1,000 people. I think that was like the largest one we ever had. But it was like official, unofficial communications kind of thing for getting people in a physical city together. And typically you would have some snacks and drinks and networking, but also a panel of people who have different expertise teaching you about the different facets of what they've found really successful at LinkedIn. So sometimes you'd have people that were good at ads, some people that could speak from the startup perspective, corporate, media, nonprofit, depending on kind of who's running it and who the leadership is for the local chapters. And they would just do a panel where they would talk about all of their success and people would ask questions. And sometimes people would kind of crossbreed the stuff we said. So a thing that I had a lot of success with, well, I started, what I thought you were talking about was we would live stream the event. So let's say you couldn't make it for the night, you couldn't get a babysitter, it was too far away or whatever, you didn't feel like it, or maybe you were just in a different part of the world, you could still tune in and be part of the program. And you would actually have people monitoring the questions. So you could have questions in the room, outside of the room. And man, I miss that so much. And I feel like as things, you know, disclaimer, I'm not your medical professional or political leader, but as things are starting to ease a little bit and maybe we're getting back to some kind of normalcy, while a lot of the large events maybe aren't back in full force, I feel like a lot of the local and regional, more intimate events, people are definitely starting to get back on that wagon, at least where I'm sitting.
Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things you and I had spoken about previously. And then I also have had several other people talk about networking events and trade shows and things like that. People say they're going to go. And now, you know, some of it, I think there are people who have compromised immune systems who are still very wary about being out in people. So I'm not talking about those people because there's medical reasons there yes. for people avoiding events. But a lot of folks have discovered that working remotely is not all bad. And, you know, my husband has an IT company. I've been running my business virtually for almost 10 years. So having everybody else get on the bandwagon with virtual work and remote work was nice. They were forced into it by the pandemic. And now they've discovered what everybody who's been doing it for a while has also discovered, that, hey, this is not so bad. I am not wearing pants and I'm in my meeting right now and nobody knows. So there's a larger group of people where you have to have something really great that makes them want to leave their no pants zone in their house, on their sofa, whatever, and actually put on pants, go somewhere, be there for an hour or two, and then come back. So, you know, what are those things that will draw someone out of their pantsless cave at home? Like that's an actual business conversation that I've been having with lots of people. This affects clients, this affects me. So where are you on that? What are your thoughts for drawing people out of their cave?
Yeah. Do you have a few hours on this one? Oh man.
Well, I don't know, man.
I'm the one who's trying to limit time. All right. So here we go. So I, as an organization here, we've been hybrid for a while. We've had different office locations in different cities. During the pandemic, we actually got rid of all of our offices and we're 100% remote now.
Okay.
And I think that's been really cool and really liberating. Mm-hmm. There's a great meme on the internet where it says, people need to come back to the office because of our corporate culture. And then it says the corporate culture, and it's just like this abysmal looking, stupid cubicle. So it's like, come on, people, get over yourself. Everybody who thinks that like, the magic is going to happen at the water cooler, let people work where they want. You need to judge people on the work, not office gossip and politics and all the machinations of 100 years ago that don't actually fit the world anymore.
Well, and so, that wastes time anyway.
It's such a load of crap, right? I mean, forget about like wearing pants or not. I get that appeal, but like, how about the reality? How about the fact that you have to spend more on dry cleaning, you have to spend a fortune on traffic, parking, wear and tear in the car, and just the sheer amount of time, right? Like I'm originally from New York. You know what the average commute is pre-pandemic in Metro New York?
2 hours.
Yeah, 90 minutes each way. Good guess. Mm-hmm. You're right on.
My fam's out on Long Island, so I am aware.
Yes, and out on Long Island is like,
I think bonkers.
Yeah, I could fly to New York City faster than somebody from far out on Long Island can go to Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And I'm in Ohio, right? Like there's something wrong with that equation.
Yeah. The commuter's like an hour flight.
Yeah, stupid. I mean, there's people that commute. There's such a thing called super suburbs in Metro New York now. People take Metro Rails, like the Metro North or whatever, it's a big railroad thing, into Manhattan, and they could be doing like 3 hours each way. Each way. That's like a full-time job, just commuting. And then people are like, well, listen, I'm productive and I listen to podcasts. Give me a break. You're not as productive as you might think. So reapportioning all of this wasted time into literally like sleep in, have coffee, make breakfast, get your head on straight and perform instead of all the crap work to get in and out of the office. That's just a farce anyway. Like when people ask me like, well, where are you based? How many square footage? How many people? I'm like, listen, I hate to burst your bubble, but none of that crap matters. Why don't you ask me what our organization can do for your organization? They're like, yes, that. So that's one side of it. But to get back to the core of what you're saying, I think the local and regional networking, not just like networking. I think there's like a lot of people don't like networking because they're not extroverted and they don't want to just throw business cards at each other because they're not a real estate person. I'm not picking on that, but I'm just saying like somebody who
Brian hates realtors. Brian
hates events when he just gets spammed business cards before people make any kind of relationship. Just like I don't reach into your wallet and grab $100 bills. Like try to meet the person before doing all that. In any case, when people have a better context, what I like about the LinkedIn local stuff, rather than networking, whatever that means, there's no context for you being there. It basically is just like, well, I want to meet people and I want to meet people. It's like, meeting people is not a video game. Like, I know all these people on LinkedIn and they're just trying to get a high score by getting more and more connections. So sometimes when I have a new connection, I say, thanks for connecting. And how can I help? And then some people say to me, oh, I don't need any help. I'm just trying to grow my network. I'm like, all right, well, no treasure chest for you. Like, what do you want me to do? Like, I'm just, okay, so I'm just a useless statistic. Thanks a lot. Maybe we should just disconnect, right? That's the beginning of a relationship. Like, I tell people, like, do you bother to check in on how anybody's doing that you've known for the last 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years? Maybe people that you have known that have been part of your journey are sitting in positions of power that can hire you a million times over, but you're wasting time with the new people video game crap. Mm-hmm. But back to LinkedIn Local, it gives you a reason for being there, right? You guys are LinkedIn aficionados. You want to learn something about LinkedIn. You're good at LinkedIn, right? So you're all sitting there learning together and there's context. So like when I'm putting together one or I'm speaking on a panel, emceeing it, whatever, I think that it's really great that people can go into a really beautiful space, not too big, not too small. So it's intimate enough that there can still be some mega connections there. And then you may network for a minute and then, you know, we're like, all right, it's time to go do our little song and dance. We talk about what the movement is. And then we bring some people who have a lot of knowledge, not that they just say that they're good, but they're legit good and that they have value for the audience. So now you met some people before they started talking. Now your head is buzzing with all sorts of stuff you're going to try. And then you might go back and talk to the people you were just talking to, talk to other people you didn't talk to, talk to the people who were just speaking. And it really gets the ball rolling, which a lot of people are challenged because if you walk into a big room and you don't know anybody, that takes a special kind of person.
It's overwhelming. Yeah.
Too much. Even if you're an extrovert, like people aren't sociopaths. So like it is a little weird to just hit people up cold that you've never met before, right? So you might just kind of hang out, like you're just going to be either a wallflower or you're only going to talk to the people you already talked to before. So this just helps cross-pollinate that and does a little bit of the heft of trying to lift that and spark it. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think is going to help draw people out so that they're making those connections? Like what is the new currency, I guess, for events? Like, is it a price point? Yes. Is it a speaker? No. Is it freebies? Is it the location?
None of that crap. Loneliness.
Really?
Yep. So like, okay, so you get some super famous speaker. Great. Chances are they might just be there to sell a book. And like, it's nice. Okay, whatever. Fine. And then you could say, well, what about a venue? It could be beautiful. And yes, I think it should be aesthetically pleasing. It shouldn't just be like in some dive hole bar and too loud or whatever. But I mean, I've done events like all over the place. And I find that people didn't say, this is such an amazing experience because of the view or because of the bar and because of the table and the chairs were comfortable. That stuff's nice, but that falls into the background. People get into stuff like this because of how memorable it is and the value they get out of it. But I think the catalyst, since you ask, is loneliness. COVID, lockdowns, restrictions, not having offices are making people insane in the head. So you and I can talk about Zoom and be on Zoom till our eyeballs are strained from looking at these stupid screens all day and night, but it is not a natural way to deal with people. So like you and I are communicators for a living. Like, so this is oxygen for me to just talk to anybody through any communication.
Anybody,
anyone out there, please. No, it's not like a mental call for help, but I'm saying like, it doesn't matter to me if a person is in front of me, if it's Zoom, if it's on the phone, I know how to adapt my communication level depending on the platform that I'm on, physical or otherwise, or somewhere in the middle. But a lot of people they never worked that hard on being that good at communication in all of these different ways. So many people will tell you, there's nothing like meeting in person and shaking your hands and having a smile and this and that. But that's not always feasible, right? Like different people. Yeah. I mean, I work with people all over the world that I've never even met. And it's okay. We can still be friends and we can still do business and everything. But there is something special about this for everybody who has not really finally honed a lot of their comm skills. Mm-hmm. So yes, loneliness will get them out of their seat. Like, for example, depending on when everybody's listening to this podcast, in like 2-3 weeks, I'm going to be in New York. I'm sure I'm going to be like flooded with the amount of people that are so excited to just see me again instead of just like watch a dumb video or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not that video is dumb. Video can be very great for your
video is great
purposes.
Again, it's getting out of the seats where they're everybody, look, let's be real. Everybody's got Zoom fatigue. We're, as much as we're all comfortable in our little sweatpants world, we wouldn't mind getting out there a little bit. And honestly, like, I haven't been crazy traveling during the pandemic, but mm-hmm. like the first major conference that I went back to like a month or two ago, I really felt a little weird and a little rusty. Like it was strange, right? I really had to like get that part of my brain back in action. It was weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We used to fly someplace like every 6 months, my husband and I, and we haven't flown since before everything got shut down. So it's been 2 years now, almost February, right before everything got shut down was our last trip. And we're both kind of like, I don't know if I want to do that anymore. So yeah, definitely feel the rusty business and, you know,
that's events why I think the regional. I'm sorry. I think that's why a lot of the local and regionals will thrive because like you, many people are either not flying or they're being really selective on it. So I say no to much more stuff than I say yes to, even though you all see pictures of me on an airplane. Like you don't see me like really super not wanting to be there. Right. Yeah. So I'm trying to be as selective as possible and then just stacking up as much stuff as I can do in a short time, but a local or a regional, you don't have to get on an airplane and be in an airport and all that garbage. You could just drive to your local cities, downtown or suburbs or wherever it is. It's something that's a little bit easier and more approachable. Yeah.
And then LinkedIn was kind of the official, unofficial start of some of the LinkedIn local groups. Do they have any like how-to tips and tricks checklist on how to start something in your area or see if something already exists in your area? Because we've talked about the Cincinnati, Ohio one, and we've talked about doing one in Dayton. Unfortunately, pandemic and the people we were going to have host us, they ended up moving several states away. So that was, we had a couple location issues, you know, but these things are all over the country, all over the world. How can you connect with one to find one? If this is news to you, how could you start one if there isn't one within, you know, like an hour or two of where you are?
It's a little trickier question than you might think. So let me try this one. So basically it started as a user movement, but as you know, there's a thing in life called copyright. So you can't just randomly call your thing LinkedIn. Like I don't just take the Nike swoosh and like start promoting it around with my own brand. So primarily for copyright reasons, LinkedIn basically took it back. Nobody got in trouble. Like everybody just kind of redid stuff. So the people
were probably like, this is a cool idea. We're going to go ahead and take this.
Yeah.
Back.
They're like, that's really cool. Give us our logo back. So basically LinkedIn owns it now. There are some guidelines and we'll have to find, there are some help articles out there.
Okay.
Probably add to the show notes. So okay. The LinkedIn local user movement renamed themselves to Local X. So basically like LinkedIn local / Local X had different guidelines and different things for help. They used to, I don't know if they still keep this up, but they used to have a fairly easy way that you could search for different city, state, country of stuff that's happening near you. I would say a lot of people do it on Eventbrite. So you could also find it on Eventbrite. And LinkedIn itself actually is a wonderful search engine. So you could just type in LinkedIn local and your city and just see pretty quickly if somebody was doing one right now. You could look at the past and see who was doing it. Because sometimes, how shall we say this nicely? Sometimes like people would get into like really weird turf battles where they'd be like, I'm the king of this city, or you can't do a thing here. And like, I live in a world of abundance and I don't think that that's necessary. So usually like when people would be like, Brian, what do we do? Like these people want to do it and we don't. I'm like, why don't y'all just work together? Like who cares? So I don't know why like sometimes people get a little childish about that. Like maybe they just want to use it for their own purposes. I don't know. But
I think we go back to that ego thing we talked about a minute ago.
Listen, like if y'all didn't sleep all through kindergarten, you should have learned to work together. So if you got a report card that Jessica and Brian don't know how to work well with others, well, maybe you need to repeat kindergarten. But
mine was talks too much.
Hey, that's
and now I talk for a living. I know, right?
You go frame that one and bring it back to your school and be like, yo, check this out. So yeah, like I think that all those three ways are probably your best bet of trying to find it. And then, hey, like if you don't see one in a city near you, mm-hmm. start one. Mm-hmm. Or again, like look it up on LinkedIn, see if other people did it. Maybe they were taking a break from the pandemic. Maybe they'd be happy to do it. But listen, I mean, for anybody who's ever tried to run any kind of event of any size, whether it's 10 people or 100 or 1,000, events are hard and there's so many things you have to do. So mm-hmm. it's not for the faint of heart. I would just tell you, like, if you've never done one, like you're not even cut out for it, make sure that you get some appropriate support. Mm-hmm. Everything from, think about it, like who is going to check people in at the door? Do you have name badges? Does the internet work? Is there appropriate seating for everybody, especially mm-hmm. if you have social distancing? And yep. what does the venue say about, you know, do you have to show proof of vaccination or a negative report? I mean, it's yeah. incredibly
hard. In some cities you do.
Yeah, it's incredibly hard. And now even more so, to the point where like, I haven't even started doing them again yet. Like mm-hmm. Jessica and I have been talking about reviving this area because like I said, there is a pent up demand. People are sick of the sweatpants. They're happy to just dust off their nice clothes and go be seen. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. Yep.
Yep. I would say, even if you've never run an event before, I've talked about this with volunteering and volunteerism. A lot of people who haven't ever led somebody or something before, they mm-hmm. think that they can't for some reason. They think that like a person can't just call up, for instance, Ronald McDonald House here in Dayton and say, hey, I want to bring a group to cook. Hey, I want to volunteer. They think that you can only do that if you're already part of a group. And if you don't work at one of the bigger places in town, like CareSource is a big one here, the base is a big one here. If you're not already employed by one of those people with somebody who's already coordinated it, like you can't. They think that's their threshold to entry. Let me just encourage you, any ding-a-ling can do it. Now, there's doing it and there's doing it well. If you've never done a group before, call in, you know, a couple people to help you figure it out and make sure you're covering all your bases. But there is no, like, you have to be a business owner. You have to have a certain degree or education level or so long in business. Anybody could do it. So just make sure you ask a lot of questions and rope some other people into helping you. But people sit around and wait, I think, and that frustrates me. So I end up doing more than what I should or want to be doing just because I'm looking around and everybody's talking about, oh, we should do this thing. And then nobody schedules it. And then I'm like, ah, guys. So then I end up scheduling it. I end up scheduling way too many things. But my point is anybody can do that. So don't feel that you have to be invited as a guest. You could plan the whole thing. And you know what? More power to you. You might find a whole new lane in life that speaks to you. So anyway,
I don't know who needs to hear this, but listen, like you all somebody. Have permission for greatness. All these people that you think are amazing and they have all this following are just regular people like you. There's no such thing as heroes. They're not internet famous getting money for autographs either. So I think that people just need to be cognizant that anybody can do these things. But to Jessica's point, not everybody can do stuff well. And hey, like a lot of failures have to happen before you succeed. So if your first event sucks, if not tons of people show up, that's okay. Keep going. Mm-hmm. You have to think about why you're doing this. Mm-hmm. It ultimately may be your bread and butter. It ultimately be a waste of time, probably somewhere in the middle where like you're not going to only do events and you're not going to just throw terrible events, but just make sure you get some appropriate help and support all along the way, because trying to do it yourself is pretty hard. I've tried to run a whole bunch of series of events in my day, and some days I wish I didn't. A lot of times I will end up canceling series of events because if I feel like it's not going the right way, or if people think that it's just like a, you know, just this thing that everybody shows up and doesn't want to help. Like lots of people are happy to show up once everybody does all the hard work. Yeah. And if I'm just going to be a circus attraction, no thanks.
Yeah. Yeah,
like it's the action. Yeah,
there is definitely a checklist that you need to run through. I want to just pause. I wrote this down and I plan on publishing it later with, you know, byline by you. You do not need permission for greatness.
I love that. I just thought that's of that right now. I'm sure it was like some derivative of what someone said somewhere, but yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'm giving it to you and I'm going to put that out there. So
no, that's fair.
You do not need permission to be great, people.
And I, So I usually say it as permission for creativity. So like, let's say I was interviewing somebody for a position and I ask like all these like really specific questions. Sometimes I'm like intentionally trying to like rile them up to just see how they like show up under pressure so they can like break through their stupid memorized Googled answers. And I remember there was somebody that like, they were like almost on the verge of tears. I'm not a bully. I'm not a mean guy or whatever, but like they were really like having a hard time. And like, I just slowed it down. I'm like, listen, like you have permission to be creative and like show who you are. Don't think that you have to give this perfect answer. And like, they really recovered off of it. I think that a lot of people, they're waiting for somebody else to do it, right? Jessica, they're waiting for somebody. Well, you know, sure, I'll go to the networking event when it happens. Listen, like so much of the world's inventions would not happen unless somebody stood up. And guess what? They all started from humble beginnings for the most part. So there's no reason on earth that you can't have permission for greatness. If you need me to tell you that and listen to this part of the podcast 10 times, that's fine. I think a lot of
Brian said you're allowed.
Brian said you're allowed, verified by Jessica. I heard there's so many people that like, I don't know, they obsess with motivation, but motivation is nice in moderation, but to an extreme, it's kind of garbage. It's like, oh, I got excited because I watched Tony Robbins or this one or that, not throwing shade at an individual, but like XYZ motivational speaker said this, I got really excited and I liked it on Facebook. And then I went back to sleep on the couch. So there's just so much motivation that you should need. And just, I think if you prime your brain that it is possible and achievable, not that it will be, but the fact that you have the opportunity for success, you're obviously not going to be successful if you don't even try.
Yeah.
So try. Now is your moment, right? I mean, fortunes of the world are changing right now. So many things are digital because there's trillions of dollars in the conference industry of things that aren't even happening. So there's so much of what people are building in digital empires. So you all need to think this through for sure.
Yep. Yep. I like it. All right. So if you could wrap up all of that, we were on several different like paths.
Yeah.
So if there was one final thought that you wanted to leave with people, what would that be?
Not to go dark, but I would tell people to try to live every day as their last, because we're not given another moment for that opportunity. So I think a lot of people, they're like, all right, fine, I will be great, but tomorrow, right? It's like, okay, well, what if that doesn't happen? What is it that you're waiting for? And I think that really helps solidify it for people that we all take advantage of that. We take advantage of what are incredible blessings and miracles. Like it's just a foregone conclusion that we deserve it and we don't.
Is that well said.
Crazy? Yeah.
Well said. Well, thank you, Brian, for chatting with me today. There will be, it sounds like, quite a few links at the bottom of the notes section here on the podcast. So if anything that we have talked about, especially the local groups, appeals to you, go check that out. I know not everybody listens through Anchor. There's some other ways. So go back to Anchor and check those things out. So until next time, this has been the Visionista.